I wanted to talk a little bit about the justice system. I've kind of been holding off on trying to talk about this political hot potato, but it's always been a hot potato, and that's just couldn't help it that almost everyone that's been complaining in my social circles has never actually been involved in the justice system at any level. I can say that I do not know one person that likes to be summoned to a jury. I think everyone that I've known, everyone that I've known to receive a jury summons, they ignore it or throw it in the trash and pretend they never got it. So I think it's a little disingenuous to talk about like, oh, we want, like, we need to reform the justice system. It's like, well, you've never been involved in it. How do you know where you're supposed to reform it? So I want to talk about, I guess you could say, my experiences with the judicial system in the United States, particularly here in California, because I've been a plaintiff, which means I was suing somebody. I've also been a defendant on the receiving end of a lawsuit, and I have also served jury. All told, I can't tell you how many times, especially over the past 17 years, been quite a few. But I know at least, I think at least served on 4 to 5 trials, both civil and criminal cases, and I was dismissed from a few others on top of that. So it's I actually look forward to that. I'll share with you my first experience, and then I'll tell you why I look forward to that. And when it comes to cases where I had to either be a plaintiff or defendant, I honestly lost count of that too. I actually just literally stared someone down this past year. It's a case that's been brewing for about 18 months, and we finally got closure on that. So that had to scare them away. So I'll touch on a little bit there. But here is the experience from an insider's perspective about how the system works, including jury selections, because I think that's very important. You always hear about, like, oh, the jury was rigged, the jury was stacked, and all these different things. I'll tell you why that's so difficult to do. To believe that that does happen, it's so difficult to do. Well, I think it was 2003, 2004 when I was first summoned, because normally after you turn 18, then you become available for public service, and jury selection is considered a public duty of a citizen. So I remember when I first got summoned and I did report. This was in the Superior Court of Orange County, so it was in Fullerton, and I remember being so nervous when I got called up to this. I didn't know how any of it worked, but I was nervous. A lot of people were nervous. Everybody had nervous tics. They either were jumping their knee or bouncing their knee or trying to find ways to relax themselves with, like, stress relievers or clicking a pen too much, you know, just different things. And I'm sitting there nervous just like they are. It's like, my goodness, I can't believe I'm here. What's going on? And I think it was the second or third. I was second or third in line to be called up to for the jury selection. Well, I guess I'll break it down how it works. So this was a criminal case, and whether it's criminal or civil, depending on the type of case, whether it's a bigger case, they'll usually be held in the Central Court of Orange County, which is located in Santa Ana. I only served once there. Well, most of my services have been in the North District of Orange County. So when you're summoned, you're among a pool of about 30 to 40 jurors, and that's per case. So there's a waiting area for jurors that fits about 100 people, and they're waiting to be called for different cases. So when we're summoned, we're about 40, and we're funneled out, and we're kind of sent in waves to so we don't crowd the whole thing when we get to the courtroom. And we're just literally just killing time there in the jury waiting room. You know, there's TV, there's snacks, and that's about it. Bring a book because you're probably gonna read all of it while you're waiting to be called up, depending on the scope of the complexity of the case and this and that. Well, when you're finally summoned to report to the room, you're not exactly selected just yet. You're still sitting and waiting in the courtroom while the occupants are being called one at a time to occupy a slot. There are 12 jury slots and then six backup jurors. So the bench area that you've probably seen in movies, there's slots for 12 jurors. And then there is right in front of them are chairs for six additional jurors that are there to replace should anything happen to one of the other jurors. So you're being interviewed the same way for all of them. And they're basically interviewing 16 at a time, 18 at a time. And the way it works is that when you're called and sit on those chairs, now you're being interviewed. And when you're being interviewed by three different parties. You're being interviewed by the judge, you're being interviewed by the plaintiff, and you're being, well, the prosecuting attorney, and you're being interviewed by the defendant's attorney. So technically, all three of them have to approve of you as their selection in order for you to remain there. If one disapproves, that individual is dismissed. So you need a collective mindset of three to be able to set up a jury, which is why you probably understand now why grand juries are a lot more difficult. And I'll start piecing the puzzle there as to why that's more difficult. So when you're seated, among the questions that is being asked, the first one that's usually asked after you're sworn to not lie in your interview, is, do you know anybody here? Do you know the plaintiffs? Do you know the defendants? Do you know their attorneys? Do you know the judge? If you know anyone, you're automatically dismissed. Don't go over there and start saying, oh yeah, I believe in the death penalty. This is a civil case. We're not using that. You know, that they'll disarm you, okay? They know the game. So if you want to serve as much as possible, you could try being as unruly as you can, but I'll tell you why. That's not actually a wise statistic either or a tactic. Well, besides that, they start telling you the ground rules on how they're gonna weigh a case, how it's actually handled, how it's actually dealt with. And I'll explain a case that's interesting because it changed my perception of how everything else is weighed. Okay, so they lay down the ground rules, and everyone gets a chance to speak from the prosecuting attorney to the defense attorney and the judge. All three of them explain their positions, how they approach things before they start actually addressing the case, because you're not as selected to hear the case yet. You're being told how a court case works and how each of them are going to approach it and what you're expected to do and abide by. And if you're not able to abide by, then they might have a conflict of interest there, so they'll dismiss you or whatever. I have been in a situation when the judge asked, do you know anybody here? And some guy raises his hand and says, yeah, so and so was my attorney. And they're like, oh, my snaps. Yeah, you're automatically dismissed. I've had a couple of points of contention, so I've always raised them. When I was the second or third in my first case to be called up to the jury selection, I stopped being nervous because I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not the one on trial here. That dude is. We're here to find out if that dude is guilty of what he's being brought up on charges for or not. Then the my I had a mental mind switch then. Like I stopped being nervous and started thinking, you know what? This isn't about me. This is about them. So like okay, so I kind of zeroed out of that and I started answering the questions as truthfully as they are, they, honestly, you know. So, let's see. I was selected to a case which I'll walk through, but it was always interesting to see how many people try to kind of duke it out with any of the contenders. And look, these people have seen jurors come and go so many different times. They know the game. They're meant to study psychology and physiology and body language and all that. So they're used to seeing a thing or two because they've seen more than a thing or two. Well, seeing as I was selected, I got to see the entire process play itself out. And there's some things I didn't agree with, which I then understood because I was younger that now it made more sense. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll go with it. Well, like I said, I have served in criminal cases and civil cases. So a civil dispute is where somebody's accusing somebody else of doing monetary harm or whatever, and they're looking for damages to be compensated. And in the case of a criminal trial, now we're talking about someone that needs to face some kind of summary judgment for a violent crime that they possibly committed or what they're being accused of committing. So every time something starts off, we're being told the individual is innocent until proven guilty. It's like, okay, they're innocent. You already might have your predispositions of these individuals because, well, we're already told Not, let me rephrase. When you're sitting down, you might already have preconceived judgments of an individual because of the way they're dressed and whatever. That's why when they're on a defense, the defense side always tries to spruce an individual up because first impressions are everything. But they don't speak, so you're really judging them based on looks. So in this case, we're being told, doesn't matter how they look, what skin color they are innocent. You're gonna hear the facts of the case as presented by both sides, and you make the choice. Okay. Sometimes the individual, if English is not their primary language, they'll have a translator. And you're supposed to trust what the translator's saying. So I'll talk about that's an interesting thing to bring up because I'll talk about that too. So this case that I was listening to, the first true criminal case that I was listening to was a situation where the son was a defendant. The prosecutor was a district attorney, and for witnesses were the parents of this son. The son was accused of aggravated assault and battery against his father. And the father went up to explain the actual attack. But the father was being very defensive of his son, too. Say he didn't mean to do it, this and that, you know, the high emotions, whatever. And then you have the case of the mom explaining her side while accusing the son that he was guilty of what he was doing, trying to kill the husband, his own father. So with all that, sorry, I'm just getting a bunch of pings here. With all that, when we were finally dismissed for the jurors to talk it amongst themselves, all 18 of us had to talk to them among themselves. I was one of three that said the dude's not guilty. And the jurors were like, look, the dude is guilty. I'm like, the dad's defending him though. You know, even though the dad's the victim, he's defending his son. So that was me weighing this based on emotional judgment. Because in the question that was brought upon, and that's why there were wiser people, like senior people there that made more sense, and I had to kind of zero out to understand this. How they explained it to me was the best way to I'll explain it to you. Says the question isn't the motive here. That's not for us to determine why he attacked his father. The question, because this is what he's being brought up on charges for, did he do what he's being accused of? Well, there was no doubt in anyone's mind. The father even admitted it. The very father's defending his son. So I'm like, well, yeah, he's guilty of it. Yeah, he's guilty of it. So now, is he guilty of all the charges? And he was guilty of all said charges. Okay. So that was that. It became unanimous after that. All of us that withheld our, I guess, our prejudices were mostly because we didn't want to judge someone else. But that's not what we were being called to do. We're being told, based on the evidence on the trial, presented by all sides and the witnesses, is the individual guilty of what he's being accused of? Yes. Were we in charge of sentencing? No, we were not. That was going to be scheduled for a later date to be handled by the judge and the counsel. So that was my duty in it. Like, okay, that was my experience. I learned a lot then because then that would shape up how I was able to defend or be aggressive when I was the prosecuting side in the cases in the future that I had to sue or I was being sued in. When there was a situation where there was a case where there was a translator involved, this translator, I felt he didn't really seem he was all there. He did translate as best he could. I don't know why. Well, he translated, but because there's different dialects in Espanol, there was a different word that was used. So this one time that I was called by my last service as a juror, I was actually dismissed. And I was shocked by who I was dismissed because the case was the defendant was a Latino or Latina, whatever. It's an individual from the Hispanic community. And the judge informed us all that we had to abide by the translator's translation, to which I objected. So I said, Your Honor, I also speak Espanol. I understand Espanol. I have been in a situation where it has been a translator, and the translator didn't really seem like he was all present. And there were some words that he did not translate correctly. Now, his translation did not affect the outcome of the verdict, I said, but I did believe it was pertinent enough for me to point out that this individual was not performing to his expected service as a translator in good faith for whether the witness or in this case the defendant. So I said, can I bring up those concerns? The judge said you can't interrupt the a service which is a hearing that's in session. So I understand that's not what I meant. But like during recess or whatever, is there any way I can bring this up? Can I speak to anybody about this? He says, you can speak to the bailiff during recess, call attention, and he'll bring it to my attention. Then we can have a conversation about it. So, okay, great, that's all. By virtue of saying that, I was dismissed by the defense attorney. I was shocked because I was the last one to be dismissed. And I just sat there. So when my number was called, I'm looking around and everybody looks at me, even the jurors. I'm like, oh, snap, that's me. Like, okay, bye. They thank me for my service and I went on my merry way. Everyone has to agree, the defense, the prosecution side, the judge, whether you'll be selected or not. You can't know anybody. If you're lying, you're busted for it. If you don't take it seriously, you're busted for it. You're supposed to report back at set time. When there's breaks or lunches, you gotta be back on time. I sat there one time, and it was after a lunch break, or yeah, it was lunch break, and since we have assigned seating for our jury spots, this one juror did not report in 5 minutes. We're all just sitting there waiting. And this judge looking around, he looks at the bailiff. Issue an arrest, like arrest so and so. I'm issuing an arrest for juror number whatever, whatever. We're like, oh snap! And because we had an over like the backup jurors, we had six of us that were backups. So and so juror number whatever, you're filling that other person's spot. Like, oh dude, that's what it's for. If someone can't report or won't report, but now they're facing judgment. They're like, oh, and a friend asked me, say, yeah, but what are they going to hold that person accountable for? And in my case, I would say obstruction of justice. They are withholding justice from being serviced. So that's an obstruction of justice. So that's a serious case. And I saw this firsthand in all my experiences. Those that say that our system is corrupt, that it's wrong, they don't like how it's dealt with, they never dealt with it. Then they haven't. They only judge it based on what the media tells them. When you're in the world of the justice system, when you actually see the operations, whether you're targeted or actually serving as public services juror, you'll understand how this game, if you will, is played. That's what makes grand juries more difficult, because you're not supposed to know anybody. And like the example that I used when I was talking to a friend, Michael Jackson's case, you're not supposed to know anybody. Who doesn't know Michael Jackson? That's why when the length of a trial takes forever, because they're interviewing every individual juror, and you're supposed to prove you don't know anybody. Almost everybody knows Michael Jackson, and you'll have an opinion of him, whether it's positive or negative. So that affects the judgment. Say, like, oh, they rigged the jury. You know, in some of the cases where there's been an officer-involved shooting of an unarmed black man, for example, like cases that happened in Atlanta, Georgia, or even Ferguson, where the police were acquitted. Acquitted means they're not found guilty. Some people that don't look at those cases because, ah, see, there's no justice. Black jurors. Black jurors did not find those cops guilty. So those black people, were they sellouts? Did someone buy them off? See, that's the thing, that no one talks about those details. It's like, do things happen in the justice system that are found unjust? Absolutely, because the strength of your argument is not what you know, what you can prove. And the case of someone that doesn't have the money to pay for a good attorney, it's like, if you can't afford an attorney, one will be assigned to you. That's part of the Miranda rights. So, with all that in mind, there's a lot of things that can happen. A lot of things that can be influenced. And it's more difficult than you might think. So we need judicial reform, justice reform. Get involved. Understand the process. That's the only way you'll ever know how. Because when you throw these gotcha things, we gotta dismantle the system and rebuild it. We gotta reform the justice system, we gotta defund the police. And do what with the money? They put it into more education. We already put billions into it. So what more can be done? Okay, so you admit that you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking about. You're just throwing these gotcha phrases, these slogans because they sound good. But since you're not involved and you don't want to be involved, you have no idea what the hell you're talking about. That's the simple fact of things. You don't know what you're talking about. Unless you're involved in it, unless you've seen it for yourself. I saw it on the news. That's not being involved in it. That's not. These things don't become as horrifying when you're involved in them. You just become agitated because you got to deal with something so stupid. But you start becoming more prepared for these things. So is it a game? Yeah, I'm sure it's a game. You just got to know the rules. And that's just it, that a lot of people don't know the rules. They think the whole thing is rigged like it was a casino. Sometimes it does seem that way. I'm not gonna say that rigging doesn't happen. Yeah, it's just that, man, you gotta be that powerful and influential to do so. But in most cases, it comes down to those that are being interviewed, and those are the common people that you're selected. So you gotta manipulate a bunch of people to get your way. So unless you're Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes that can outright do a crime and have it recorded and still walk away scot-free because you have that much power, then yes, then yes, there's the game is rigged. But you have to understand how the judicial system works before you can make comments about it. So I thought I'd share that experience because I know a lot of people that express themselves and they honestly have no idea what they're talking about. You're free to express yourself, but you gotta learn to admit when you have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. So that's that. That's it for Off the Record. Yeah, that's it. So stay tuned for the next one. I'll see you then. Check out my other shows while you're waiting for it, okay? See you next time.